Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody claims that they want the best things out of life, but not everyone wanna fall to the tall that's right.
Greetings and welcome to Wicked Wednesday in the basement. Live on the Xmedia Group Blog Talk Radio, now at Max 98.9 FM. I'm your host, Jazzy J. What a pleasure it is to introduce musician, funketeer, entrepreneur, heartbreaker, entertainment guru, a true living legend indeed, Mary King, with his message to the world on how independent media outlets can shake up the music industry through unity and a reflection on his career in the music industry. Let's bring him on.
Well, how are you?
Hi, Jerry.
How are you?
We were sounding real good
with that song. Yeah, I didn't know you were going to use our song. You got to rise up and wise up.
Okay, now. So let's get started. Can you reflect a little bit to the audience on Wise Up?
Well, Wise Up, that was one of the bands I was in called The Second Resurrection, which was an offshoot from the 6 Degrees South group that we were in. We changed the name. That was the time that we were doing the Joe Tech show, and we went to Hollywood and recorded a full album, and you know, it was a reflection of the times and the thing about it is that it still reflects the times, because everybody has to rise up, and they have to wise up, and you know, just wise up and start learning, start being proactive on what they're doing. Tomorrow is another day in time. Nobody's promised tomorrow, but it's another day in time if you make it. So you have to do everything you can to have progress for tomorrow. And tomorrow is also a future. And it should be a future for us and a future for our children and all coming after us.
Right, right. Now, Jerry,
it should all be a profitable and a blessing.
Okay, Jerry. Now, can you share with the audience how it all got started for you as a funketeer and musician?
I've always been basically a funketeer. I started off in school, basically as a teenager, and my influences, of course, were at that time James Brown, which, you know, is known as basically the father of funk because of the way he set his music up differently from a lot of other artists,
mm-hmm.
what they call on the one. And I've been in two previous bands from that time, and then, but, you know, that was a very, very good learning experience, and I see things a little bit differently because I never really started out as an amateur. My very first engagement was a paid gig, so I've never seen the amateur side, so I really didn't know what that's about, and it's kind of foreign to me. But and over those years, you know, I've been with quite a few famous people, in fact, and I was, you know, personally taught by some of these people. I was living in New York. I had talked to James Brown and sat down personally with me. Another guy who was working was he had Major Lance. Major Lance schooled me on some things. Billy Preston taught me some keyboard licks. And you know, just I was around people all the time. Wilson Pickett, people like that. You know, back in the early days. And so when you're around people like that, you learn the professional route. These people are out there as a profession, and you make it your living, and you make it a living, and you handle your business just like any other business. The music business is no different from any other business. It just happens to be that the product is an intangible in some, you know, in a lot of ways, because you can't, you know, grab it or grasp it unless it's a CD or record or something like that. But it's an intangible product, but you have just as much, it has just as much value as a T-shirt that you would put on.
Well, now, I know you love some slick boots. Tell me a little bit about your passion and your style as a musician and artist. You're a little bit funky when I see your pictures when you were performing.
Well, it just so happened that during that time, a lot of the bands at the time had switched up with the funketeer as funketeers, and funketeers in general wore boots. If you look at Rick James, he wore boots. You look at Sly Stone, he wore boots. Quite a few artists at the time wore boots, and I was very extravagant, very extravagant. But I'll tell you, my mentor at that time was a famous MC. Famous MC. His name was Gorgeous George. Now, Gorgeous George was an MC. He MC'd the Motown Review, the Jackie Wilson Show, the James Brown Show, the Joe Tex Show, the B.B. King Show,
right.
any show of that time, Gorgeous George always emceed it. But Gorgeous George was a tailor. And he, after he would announce all of the groups, I mean any group, after every act, he would change clothes. And he would come out, I mean, he was dressed to the nines. I mean, everything was matching. He had, you know, big pompadour hair and everything. I mean, he was clean, as they say. And I noticed how all of the ladies were always hollering after his change of outfits. So from his inspiration, I got to the point to where I changed outfits after every set. And I got the same reaction every time I would come out, all the ladies would holler, you know, because I was, you know, changing these outfits. But I was also very extravagant with the type of, real extroverted. I wore boots from, low boots all the way up to past my knees. Sometimes we would have glass heels on. I mean, you know, we were way out
wow.
there. Fringe. At the time, you know, big fros, you know, the whole bit. And we were always around major stars, all the time. And they dressed the same way. In fact, when we did the CBS Family Affair, we were right there with Earth, Wind & Fire, the Commodores, Chaka Khan and Rufus. The Isley Brothers, we were out there with all of them, the Brothers Johnson, you know. I might be talking a time before some of our listeners know about
it. Yeah, I guess.
But,
you know, well, Jerry, let's talk a little bit about your career now at Starbreakers Entertainment and a little bit about the college tour platform that you guys have going on.
Well, what I did is that I started noticing because, you know, I was with when I was with Joe Tex, we had a hit record back in the day, and a gold hit record. We sold over 1 million albums and 5 million copies, and I got a lot of my training through CBS, which I had the best of the best, and we traveled with that all around the country. Well,
okay.
From that point, after we were no longer with CBS, I started a label and went independent. Now, when you go independent, that's when you find out that the music industry does not work as slick or as intact as you were accustomed to it. And I couldn't figure out why we were having, you know, problems getting on the airwaves, why we were having problems with promoters and, you know, different people in the industry. But it was because we were independent. And of course, you know, the business model was dealing with the majors. But I was already trained by the majors, so the only way I knew how the majors work, you know, were how they work. So I always approached the radio stations and approached everything the way I was accustomed to doing from the training of the majors, but they were not really paying attention because I was an independent. So I said, okay, well, since I do have the major training and the major background, I can utilize it, and we'll just have to circumvent and take a non-traditional road to make, you know, these artists stars. And so I started a company called entertainment company called Starbreakers. And Starbreakers is a, you know, non-traditional system in which we assist artists getting out there before the public and becoming household names, and then we give them aftercare services to help them with their products,
okay,
concerts and things like that. And the way we planned to do it was by having a showcase. But we wanted to do something totally different with our showcases because when I reviewed a lot of these showcases, well, most of the showcases after you performed, that was pretty much it. There was no, you know, nothing else after the show. So I said, no, this can't go on like this. These people are not moving. So we developed a television show. And I took a television show. I have a, we had a, you know, television video truck, three cameras, lights, sound, you know, editing. I mean, the whole schematic of a television network. And I was on the cable systems, and we took it to, and we took that show to television on public access. From that point, a lot of people were looking in and tuning in because I was one of the premier showcase producers in the city of Atlanta, which at the time was growing in perception as being a major hub of music. And and in fact, we still have our show. We still have a YouTube channel, and I'm going to give a shameless plug. You can go to www.youtube.com/Atlanta in Concert. That's the name of the show, Atlanta in Concert. And you will see our programs and some of the programs. And we still have a lot of shows. We did probably well over 200 shows already, and I still have maybe another 200 in the can that we are going to release. And then we have more shows that we are going to film for 2017. And this is what will culminate into the Starbreakers college radio tour. We started putting things together. Like I said, remember that I was trained by the majors, so I know exactly how they operate. I know what they will do. I know what they won't do because they trained me, you know, in showing me what they will do and what they won't do. So I said, well, you know, we can go around this. We can basically we set it up as a what you might want to call a excuse me a disruptive kind of operation. You know, we're going to disrupt the system. And don't get me wrong, you know, disrupt is a very positive term now because almost all industries in America today are being disrupted. You know, the banking system is being disrupted by new technology. The alcohol manufacturing, craft, you know, all of these craft beers and things are disrupting the major beer companies. All these, you know, the telephones are disrupting these systems. The music industry is being disrupted, you know, by the technology. So everything in America now is being disrupted. So we're not doing anything different because we are basically putting everybody on point in a non-traditional ways, and we're using the new technology to transcend the systems that are blocking these new artists out.
Okay.
And so the college radio tour, we're going to utilize Studio 21 Media, and we're going to have a various amount of shows basically directed for college-age students. Most of those students are millennials. We're going to call this a millennial movement. And most of these college-age students, we found out that a lot of the colleges, and I don't want to, you know, sound too bitter about this, but there are quite a few colleges that do not allow their students on their own radio stations or to program their own music or the stations are programmed for jazz, which, you know, to me is like there's a disconnect because 17 to 24 year old students do not millennial students do not listen to jazz. And, you know, I'm all for a diverse program format, but when you're playing jazz, you know, and you have students that are paying, you know, $25,000 a year to go to school and they still can't get on their own radio station, they can't hear their own music, and you have someone at the radio station two generations removed programming their music, there seems to be a huge disconnect there to me. So what we're going to do is that we're going to see if we can find college radio stations that will take our podcast. We're going to take all of the new music here in Atlanta. We're going to program it on Studio 21 Media. We're going to put that into a podcast, and then we're going to send that podcast to all of the college and university radio stations around the country, and try to give college age millennials the music of their generation, and also create stars through the college ranks. Okay. Then from that point on, we will target those particular college towns, you know, that break this music out, and then we will take those new artists those new breakout artists into those particular college towns to hold concerts, you know, either at a local venue or at, you know, the campus auditoriums or something like that. And that will create a whole new revenue stream for the music business. It will create sales. It will create concerts. And it will also be a part of an educational program, because since these students cannot get on their own radio stations and they cannot program their own music, we're going to make available for them to create their own shows. And they'll be able to get it to us here in Atlanta with Starbreakers, and we will go ahead and program their shows from other cities and those college towns. So we're gonna have a wide variety of a lot of shows, creating a lot of air personalities, creating a lot of new artists that haven't been heard, and creating concerts and most importantly, revenue for people who can now have jobs who all want to participate in this industry. There's no law that says, you know, the major record companies or the major systems should control entertainment, you know, forever and a day. So we're basically disrupting in a very positive way.
So now tell us, how can independent media outlets get on board and make this a reality?
Well, we're going to be, I'm getting a team of millennials, and we're going to correlate all of the social media platforms that we can and pull them in. I mean, all of these things will be on every social media platform that we can come up with. You know, we may even have some people who invent some and, you know, new apps and things like that. But all of these platforms will be there. And once we have, especially some of the heads of different companies, like I said before, it's designed to create revenue. It's designed to create jobs. And that means that when you get an audience, see, first of all, you have to have that audience. So, and you can only get advertising if you have an audience. When we draw the millennial audience, I want you to understand, there are 90 million millennials in the United States. 90 million.
Okay.
There are 1 million millennials in Atlanta alone. But this is not about Atlanta. This is about the whole country. This is about the whole U.S. economy in the entertainment business, because having lack of access, lack of exposure for these independents is holding this whole market down. And you have the music business. Now, this is just my emphasis, trying to live on 10 songs that you keep hearing over and over and over. You keep hearing the same 10 songs. You keep seeing the same 10 people on television. You keep seeing the same 10 people in the newspapers and news articles. You see the same 10 people. You know, just it's always the same 10 people. I mean, I just don't understand how the U.S. economy can grow when the music industry seems to be, just trying to confine these 10 artists over and over and over and over again, and they basically, you know, just keep making money just with those same 10 artists. I mean, that's in every genre. You know, you may have 10 top hip-hop artists, 10 top R&B artists, 10 top country artists, but basically it boils down to 10 artists that you're hearing over and over and over again on syndicated radio. From a listener standpoint, you know, a lot of listeners are being disenfranchised, and I don't want everybody to think I'm trying to diss the major medias. I'm just opening the door and disrupting a system to, you know, so other people can get out there, because 25 to 40 jobs are created by the breaking of just one CD. So if we can break open 25 to 40 jobs, and that's per CD. So we can take that one CD and we can go from college town to college town to college town to college town. That's going to open a lot of doors for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Hopefully later on we will be able to take some of those funds and turn it into educational programs. Because, like I said before, a lot of students who cannot get on their own radio stations, we're going to open that door where they may use all the new technology and create their own programs, and Starbreakers will have that outlet for them to send their podcasts into us, and we will be able to syndicate new shows all around the world to that millennial audience. And like you said before, and I'm going to ask you a question like this: other medias that can be put in, they will be notified, and these syndicated shows. See, because money is in syndication, so if you have an outlet, that means that your outlet will draw a portion of these 90 million millennials. That means you're going to have a huge audience, and in your geographical location, that means that your station or your outlet or your club or your venue or your platform can now draw advertisers who will pay you to advertise their products to that particular audience. That's a contained audience. All in the same generation, between 17 and 34. The millennials are a huge audience, and quite frankly, people don't really understand how different this generation is. But we're going to tap into their musical tastes, and it's not going to be just about hip-hop or R&B. We're going to have different shows for hip-hop, R&B, rock, metal, country, you see, all in their age group, but it's going to be fresh for everyone. It's going to be new for everyone, and it's going to be an economic boom or boon for everyone who wants to participate. We will disrupt the status quo, and yeah, we're going to have the status quo protectionists come out, but you know. But they're going to come out. I mean, that's just a natural process. But we're going to take a very positive outlook, and we're going to break this market open.
Well, Jerry, tell us a little bit more about some of your television work and some of your work in the music industry. I know you mentioned a couple of legends earlier, but can you elaborate a little bit? I know you did a couple of television platforms here in Atlanta you were telling me about. So can you share that?
Well, sure. Like I said before, what we have done, we have put these television elements, and I now have affiliates. We have all the cameras, the editors, the lights, the sound systems. Everything is, you know, ready to go. And we're going to begin that in 2017. We started out on the cable systems here in Atlanta, And we're going, in fact, we're going back to those cable systems, plus the traditional television setups here in Atlanta, which will give us well into probably about 2 million viewers. But we're also going to use the other on-demand television systems around the country because, you know, like I said before, our crowdfunding setups that we're coming up with probably next week, we're going to finance that because most companies could really, you know, be started, but they have a hard time getting the startup capital. And people who are not aware of supporting independent productions, you know, it's very difficult to for traditional CEOs or advertising execs to support independent productions simply by the culture. They really don't understand. They really don't know. So we have to build that house. But our system here, the interconnect through Atlanta, gives us roughly about 2 million viewers. And then we're also going to, you know, like I said, put the on-demand systems all across the country. There are quite a few. I'm not going to mention them by name, but there are quite a few new television operations, new television or webcasting platforms out there, and we will have the content, you know, because content is the currency of the future. Mm-hmm. See, a lot of people don't understand. Content is the currency of the future. So we're going to have content. We're also going to correlate and with those cameras and with our Starbreaker Showcase, you will soon see the Starbreakers Atlanta in Concert television show, but we will also formulate that show into a DVD. And we're going to pick the best of the best of the best of these artists and put them all in one big show. They have
to be close on time now. We're going to move on to another question.
Okay.
Now, tell us a little bit about your life with 6 Degrees South.
Well, 6 Degrees South, they were guys that were already out there on the road. I was playing with a group in Alabama called Brown Sugar. And, you know, we were just playing around. And I met them. They were coming through a military base. And I saw them, and I said, well, what are you guys doing? They said, well, you know, we're doing this, we're doing that. And they said they were based out of Lawton, Oklahoma. And I was really getting ready to, you know, get away from that particular territory. And so I said, well, look, I said, I'll join you guys. And I said, give me about a month to, you know, get my things together. So I took off and went to Lawton, Oklahoma, and I joined up with them. And you know, I was, like I said, I was a showman. And you know, and there's a big difference between being a singer and an entertainer. I'm a singer too, but I profess to be an entertainer. And I like to feel that I complimented the band by putting, you know, having quite a bit of input into it and becoming a star group. And the next thing I know, we were on the road, and we their circuit was a military circuit. We did all of the bases around the United States. We played in every state of the Union except for Hawaii and Alaska. Everywhere else we played. And I mean, and we ran into a lot of upcoming stars. I mean, we played with I think we played somewhere where the average white band was just starting up. We played with them, and it was a lot of people we met. You know, a lot of people we met on the road. I mean, and you develop out there on the road, and you develop how to deal with an audience. And so we became rock stars in our own right. We became rock stars, and when we played, I mean, with all these bases, the military, I mean, they really came out for us. But at the same time, you know, military, they're always moving. You know, they're always going to different bases. So we built up a fan base, and we were running to them at different bases and different locations all the time. And then we got a gig in Germany. And we went over to Germany, and we played the military bases over there. You know, a gang of military bases over there. We played all the military bases in Germany. And when we got there, all the guys were hollering. You know, they were hollering at us by name. I was playing, and somebody said, "Hey, Jerry." I'm like, "Who knows me over here?" Well, it's the military guys that did it, but they basically made us. And from that point on, we were out there for about 5 years, and then we met Joe Tex.
Okay.
And Joe Tex had just come off of what we'll call a sabbatical. He was a minister for a while, but he wanted to get back into the show, you know, show business. So we met him. He told us, you know, what he wanted to do. And the thing was, he was a star. He was already a star, and he was already a recording artist. Now, we were rock stars in our own right, but bottom line, we needed a star, and we wanted to go into recording. So it was a perfect combination, plus the fact that we had all the instrumentation that he needed. So we all got together, and this was his second coming because, you know, he was a star of the 60s. This was his second coming. And so he suggested we change the name. We weren't crazy about it at first, but with his second coming, we changed the name of the group 6 Degrees South to the Second Resurrection. And that was in honor of Joe Tex's second resurrection, you know, the coming out the second time.
Jimmy, can you tell the audience how to reach you?
Yes, you can reach me by my email address is entertainmentatlanta@yahoo.com, or if you cannot remember that one, my other email address is Atlanta in Concert. That is the name of the television show. AtlantaInConcert@yahoo.com. I think that might be better. It's Atlanta in Concert. That's all one word together, all lowercase. AtlantaInConcert@yahoo.com. And we will be
your insight and words of wisdom for the audience today.
Never give up. Just keep going, because you have a God-gifted talent, and you are a voice in this world, and you deserve to be heard. If God put you here for a reason, you just keep running His plan.
Jerry King, we thank you again for hanging out and reflecting on your life and career as a musician, entertainer, and entrepreneur. We wish you continued success in life. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'll definitely
be back.
Thank
you so much. God bless, and I enjoy the opportunity.
Okay, and have a great night now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today for Wicked Wednesday in the Basement, live on Ming X Media Group Atlanta, 98.9 FM, a show dedicated to true life experiences. I'm your host, Jazzy J. Until then, keep God first in your life.
Hey! Got to pay back. Revenge. I'm mad. Got to get back. I need some get back.
must I live a life of a millionaire? Spending my money, honey, oh, I didn't care. Taking my friends out for a mighty good time. Drinking that good tin champagne and wine. Oh, just as soon as my money got low, couldn't find my friends and I had no place to go. But if I ever get my hands on a dollar again, I believe I'll hold on to that eager grin. Call the fun, I'll go by the fortune. But just let you get up on your feet again. Here they all come telling you, boy, that you're a long lost friend. So funny, won't you? Spin you down and out. Let me tell you about it. Nobody wants you. Ah, nobody wants you now. Down and out. Down and out.